So the Korean Peninsula now is North Korea getting ready to launch a medium-range missile. That's the latest escalation between North and South Korea, with the U.S. and China watching closely. The missile might be capable of hitting targets more than 2,000 miles away. It poses potential threats to Japan and even the American military base in Guam, at least on paper. Joining us now from Seoul is Don Kirk, veteran journalist based in Seoul, author of several books, including Korea Betrayed, Kim Dae-jung, and Sunshine. Don, welcome to the show.
Good talking to you.
Tell us about this missile and its capabilities, and what's the feeling there in Seoul?
Well, the feeling is that they're going to test fire a Musudan, which is a medium-range missile, not capable of getting to the continental U.S. or even Hawaii or Alaska, but capable, as you pointed out, of reaching these targets in nearby countries, which are bristling with American bases in both Japan and Guam, and, of course, in South Korea. Now, they've test-fired missiles before. So when they do test fire, it's going to be a one-day story. There's going to be all kinds of reports on the test fire, and there's going to be all kinds of rhetoric flying around. And that'll be that. The real concern, of course, is that someday, and maybe even soon, they'll go beyond test firing and fire at a real target. But, you know, that's kind of almost an abstract concern. It doesn't seem to me or to anybody else I've talked to that they're really at that stage.
Now, there's another test here, and I'm wondering what the Korean media is saying about this, if there's any sense that the U.S. either has the capability from Guam to shoot down that missile, demonstrating that there is an anti-missile capability there aimed at the Korean Peninsula, or that the U.S. should do something like that.
Well, Admiral Locklear, who's the commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific, has said that the U.S. could shoot down this missile, but isn't going to try on a test. I wouldn't count on the ability of the U.S. to shoot down this missile. Now, obviously, they can, in the sense that they've got the firepower to do it, but can they really catch it in midair? I wouldn't count on that, but I hope we're not going to have to see a test of that either. I hope that they're not going to try to shoot it down. The act of shooting down this missile or trying to shoot down this missile would mark another step in confrontation and might have unnecessary provocative results. And I think that that's why the U.S. is not going to do it. That's the impression I got from what Admiral Locklear said.
All right. State of alert there on the Korean Peninsula, particularly in the south, as observers suspect a medium-range missile launch might be imminent sometime in the next few days. Don Kirk, veteran journalist based in Seoul, author of several books, including Korea Betrayed, Kim Dae-jung, and Sunshine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So in this crisis or puppet show on the Korean Peninsula, call it what you will, is there a back channel of communication between the North and the South, or between Pyongyang and the United States, a conversation being conducted perhaps a few decibels below all the public rhetoric? If so, what might that conversation be like? Joel Witt is a former nuclear negotiator and visiting fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Joel Witt, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you think there is a valid back channel between the United States and North Korea? And if so, is it operative right now, do you think?
Well, of course, I'm not in the U.S. government anymore, so I can't speak authoritatively about that. But I suspect there is no back channel. And indeed, we really haven't had any substantive contacts with the North Koreans since February 2011.
And what was that conversation like when there has been a direct or direct-like contact with North Korea? How effective has that been?
Well, I have to say, you know, it's a mixed record, but I think it's certainly a lot better than the general perception and what I see in the media. The fact is, over the past 20 years, we've had numerous contacts with the North Koreans, and we've had some agreements that have worked in our favor and others that haven't. So, but the point here is we're not trying to reach any agreement. We're just trying to start a channel of communication that can calm the situation down and maybe find a peaceful way forward.
What do you make of the report that there is some sort of New York channel, an attempt, kind of as you're describing it there, to restart the six-party talks or to inquire as to whether there's any way to restart the six-party talks with North Korea on nukes?
You know, the New York Channel has existed once again for almost 20 years. And way back in the 1990s, there was a lot of substantive discussion going on there, a lot of give and take. Nowadays, I think what happens is a U.S. official meets a North Korean official. He reads his kind of boilerplate talking points. The North Korean reads his boilerplate points, and everyone goes home. So that's not really diplomatic discussion or give and take.
How does it work? I mean, where do the contacts come from? I mean, you know, it's the Swiss interests in Iran that is the intermediary between the Iranians and the United States, which I always thought was curious, but this seems even more obscure. Is it a Korean restaurant, a business interest, an office on 43rd Street? What is it?
What it is that, as you know, North Korea is a member of the United Nations and therefore has a mission in New York. And in the North Korean mission, there is an official whose sole job it is to meet with U.S. government officials and to deal with U.S.-North Korean relations. So normally what happens is someone from Washington flies up to New York, meets with this North Korean official, and it may be in a restaurant or a coffee shop, or it may even be in his office, and that's where they do business.
Joel Witt is a former nuclear negotiator, author of Going Critical, the First North Korean Nuclear Crisis. He's a visiting fellow at the U.S. Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Mr. Witt, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Later this hour, we're talking about the changing structure in the science classroom and some of your science learning memories.
My name is Jay. I'm calling from Fort Lauderdale. The strongest memory I have of science classes was building bridges out of balsa wood and weight testing them until they collapsed in middle school. The record ended up being the scrawny kid standing on his bridge. I always wonder if he became an engineer.
Oh, we'd love to know. If you became an engineer, give us a call if you know that story. 877-8 might take more of your memories coming up. Follow us at Twitter at The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.